The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Our specialist teams are there to support you so you can keep your business going and growing.
Well, yesterday, the accountancy firm Deloitte issued a statement about the rising number of insolvencies in Ireland. The number of companies becoming insolvent looks like being up by a third by the end of this month compared with the first 9 months of 2021. Our next guest is well aware of what some of these companies are going through. Jenny Timoney ran a food company, Doolittles, that brought in over €3.5 million in revenue per year, but it failed in 2008 when the last recession hit. Jenny is back in business with a rapidly growing athleisure wear company called Fitpink, and they're selling online internationally and all around the country in department stores. Jenny, you're very welcome. Let's go back first. You were born and raised in Donegal, but you have an interesting background, particularly on your mother's side. She's from much further afield.
That's right. I was born in Donegal, but raised across Dublin and Australia, actually. And I came back to Donegal when I was about 18. But my mum is born of Indian parentage. So she was born in Kenya, but grew up in the UK. And she was studying to be a nurse in Bethnal Green. And she had a friend who happened to be from a place called Ballintra in Donegal and invited her back to Ballintra for a holiday. And lo and behold, she met my dad in a place called Mullinasole, which is right beside where I live now. So he chased her for 2 years and hunted her down. Really,
he chased her sort of from Donegal to London, was it?
Yeah, well, he was a truck driver for his family's business, so he would have been driving the continent and into the UK. So he would stop off at her apartment every so often and knock on the door. And the story goes that she wouldn't even let him in for the first few times. And eventually she'd let him in for a cup of tea. And so it developed. So she eventually gave in.
Romance bloomed. And then they got married and they moved to Donegal then.
They
that's
did.
When you were born.
They did. They had an Indian wedding and an Irish wedding and moved to Donegal in the early 70s, I think. And I was born in 1975.
That must have been a huge change for your mum.
I'd say it was. She was the first brown person to arrive in Donegal town. I meet very elderly people now at this stage that would say to me they still remember in great detail the first day they saw her in the town. You know, they'll describe that she was wearing a long brown corduroy skirt and beautiful leather boots and a lovely cream blouse, and she had long dark hair down to her waist. She was just so striking, I think. But it must have been difficult for her. You know, her name is Latha, not Lee, but Irish people couldn't say her real name, so they said, well, we'll call you Lee. So she's been called Lee all her life. But she made friends quickly. She was really embraced in Donegal town, and she's got friends there to come back to.
So you started school in Donegal, and then the family moved to Dublin when you were quite young.
That's right. I started school in Donegal and went to national school in Donegal town and also Inver, and then moved to Dublin when I was about 5.
Do you have many memories of those first 5 years?
Oh, I do, yeah. Donegal, for me, even though we moved to Dublin and onwards to Australia, Donegal was always home. And all my memories of Donegal were good ones, with a real sense of family and belonging and home. So, yeah.
But also an interesting identity and family background, because presumably at some point you would have gone to see your mother's family back in England, and that would have been culturally a very different experience.
That's right. The culture shock was incredible. So it was at a time where we didn't really celebrate culture in Ireland, different cultures. We tried to assimilate. So my mum had no support, no Indian kind of network in Ireland. So she tried to assimilate as much as possible. And we didn't really acknowledge or celebrate our Indian culture. We just tried to become as Irish as we could. So then we would go back to our relatives in the UK and we would walk inside a front door and it was as if we were in India. So different. You know, the men would still go out the back to drink and smoke, and the women would stay in the kitchen and pretend not to drink, but they'd be having a sneaky glass of wine in a mug. So it was so different, yeah. And then the smells of real Indian cooking, and the, you know, we used to so look forward to the food and the cooking, and my aunties and everybody still wearing saris. And it was amazing.
When you went to Dublin then, you would have been quite young. Was that a big change for you? Had you ever experienced, while growing up, racism of any kind?
Yeah, I think maybe there was racism in Donegal, but I don't remember. I do remember racism in Dublin. I vividly remember another child's school party or birthday party. So I remember walking in the door and the mother standing at the door, you know, receiving the children, and she looked at me with horror and shock when she saw my little brown face. And I never felt more unwelcome. And as a 5-year-old child, you don't understand, what have I done wrong? So,
and that was all in a look.
In a look, just a look of shock and horror, because obviously the child, her daughter or son who invited me to the party, children don't see colour. Children of that age aren't racist. Their friends are friends. So the child would have said, can Jenny come to my party? And the mum would have said, of course, not knowing Jenny was a little brown kid. So, so yeah, it was racist. I remember being called names like half-caste and nigger at a very young age. And those names don't come from other 5- and 6-year-olds. They come from adults.
But to your recollection, it was a different experience in Donegal, because obviously you've gone back to Donegal afterwards, later in life. We can talk about that. But it wasn't quite like that.
It wasn't, maybe because I didn't spend many years in school in Donegal. But no, I suppose in Donegal we were known. So we were known to be, oh, you're James Timoney's daughter or you're Richard Timoney's niece. And there was a sense of belonging there. Whereas in Dublin, we were different and we stood out and we were unknown. It wasn't familiar to us. We weren't familiar to people in Dublin.
And it was the 1980s. The family moved to Australia.
That's right. So we were in
Dublin. A lot of emigration at that time.
There was. It was in the thick of the 80s recession, when interest rates were up on 18-20%, and my parents decided to move to Australia for a better quality of life and a better standard of living. My mum was a nurse, so we got to Australia on a nurse's visa. They were crying out for nurses at the time. So we landed, when I think of it, my parents were only in their late 30s, maybe just around 40, and they took 3 children on a plane with as many suitcases as we could take, and landed in Sydney Airport with nothing, you know, no apartment ready or anything like that. So what they did was brave, you know, and it must have been very scary for them.
And what was it like for you?
I was just, I think, at that kind of awkward age, just on the cusp of my teenage years, and I was fairly unsettled, and I never really let myself settle into Australia. I remember my Uncle Morris would ring, which was a big deal, making a phone call from Ireland to Australia at the time, and God bless him.
It
was so expensive, so he would ring every Friday, and I remember for the first 6 months I couldn't speak to him on the phone, and I was very close to him at the time. Just the tears would come when I knew he was even on the phone. And I remember listening to Christy Moore and Christy Hennessy as a 12-year-old, just because it was home and it sounded like home. So I was deeply homesick, really, really homesick for a very long time. I went back in 1989. This was only about two or three years after we went to Australia. I came back for my uncle's wedding. And I think my parents thought that might settle me a little bit. But actually, it had the opposite effect. It made me more determined than ever to move back to Ireland as soon as I possibly could.
So Australia really wasn't...
So it wasn't for me, but I suppose as an adult, I look back and see it as a wasted opportunity.
Were there any early signs that you were entrepreneurial or interested in getting out and working? Did you have a bit of a work ethic, or were you very dedicated to school?
Well, both, actually. I was quite academic. I was very dedicated to school, but I also had a really strong work ethic, and that came from my family, from seeing my father and my mother work so hard. I remember at the age of 12, I was dying to get a pair of Converse All-Stars. They were all the rage at the time. They were just hitting the scene, and I had to have a pair of these, but obviously there was no money for them. I didn't get pocket money or anything like that, so I thought I'd need to get a job, and I was only 12. So I remember we at the time lived at Bondi Beach, and walking up and down the sort of promenade looking for work, and I met a fellow immigrant, a guy called Jeff. He was South African, and he owned a shop called New Zealand Natural. Asked for a job, and
you're only 12,
yeah. And he said, well, how old are you? And I said, I'm 16, and got the job. And I spent the next, I'd say, 2 years that I worked there, ducking every time somebody from my class at school came in the door, because I was terrified I'd be found out and turfed out. And I was given quite a bit of responsibility at 12. I was opening the shop, I was cashing up, I was going to the bank. And I remember then when I was leaving that job, because we moved across the city, I finally decided to confess my sin to Jeff, the owner. And he said, oh, sure, I've known that all along.
He knew you were.
He knew what age I was. But look, he was an immigrant too. And he was just supportive. And I was a good worker, and we were both happy, so yeah.
So you came back from Australia. You decided, what age were you when you came back to Ireland? And it was Donegal that you wanted to go to.
Yeah, so I finished my high school certificate at the time when I was just before I turned 18. And I came back to Donegal within, I think, a few weeks. And yeah, it was very much Donegal. That to me was home, even though we'd lived in Dublin. Donegal really was home to me. So I came back really intending to spend a year or more studying. So I applied or started making inquiries to study law or medicine, and realised then that I would have been classed as an international student. So that would have been a very, very expensive degree to do. So I abandoned that plan, and, you know, I was working some part-time jobs, and I thought, well, look, I don't like working for other people at that time, so I thought I'd start a business. So I went to the credit union, and for some mad reason, they gave me 3,000 punts at the time, and I used that to start up a cafe at the age
of...
Did
you know anything about cafes?
Not very much. I learned to make soup on the first day from a book. I learned to make, I think, lasagna on the second day, apple pie on the third day, and sure, by the end of the week, I had a basic menu. But I thank God there was no TripAdvisor in those days, because I don't think I would have lasted long.
Well, maybe not for the first week, but you were on top of it by week two.
Yeah, I was fairly on top of it. Now, the menu was fairly basic, but people got fed and the portions were good and big, so we were all happy.
And you were 18?
I was 18.
And in Donegal, had all the family moved back at this stage?
Not at that stage, no. Not at that stage.
So you're on your own?
I I moved back because I had extended family here. So I had aunts and uncles here, and my grandmother was alive at the time, and my godmother, who was like a grandparent to me. So, I mean, I came back for that sense of extended family.
And it was in around that time your dad died?
He did. My dad passed away when I was 18.
And he would have been quite young.
He was only 42, yeah. So that was a big shock to the family. And that kind of triggered, over the course of the next few years, that sort of triggered everybody moving back. So my mum moved back when I got married a few years later and had my first child, Chloe, my eldest daughter. So one by one, yes, everybody came back.
And you had the cafe going, and you had an eye towards expansion.
I did, yes. I was ambitious, even at 18. And a second cafe came up in the Craft Village outside Donegal Town the next summer. So the first cafe was kind of May to September. And the second cafe I took the following summer. So I had two going at that stage. And they were just seasonal. And then I obviously made enough to keep me going in the winters. And then a couple of years later, the opportunity came up to open a more permanent cafe in a sort of a new base that was opposite McGee's factory. So you had factory workers and you had professionals in the area. So I opened Doolittle's there.
And Doolittle's started as a cafe, but very quickly became a whole sandwich business and sandwich distribution.
It did. It started as the cafe, but there was a lot of, downtime in the afternoon, very busy morning, lunchtime, dead in the afternoon. So I really wanted to utilise that spare capacity. So that there was a gap in the market for a quality prepacked sandwich. All the prepacked sandwiches out there were really last options. You wouldn't buy them unless you'd nothing else to eat. So I figured I could do that better. And we started supplying a couple of local shops. And that really kind of built out from Donegal Town to Ballyshannon to Sligo to Galway and further afield, yeah.
Incredibly busy. It's very hard to build a business like that, because it's about getting the product right, getting it out, getting the distribution. And then all the time while you're trying to get all that right, you're trying to win new business as
well.
That's
right. Yeah, it was tricky. When I look back on it, and people say, you have a strategy for a business. In those days, there wasn't a strategy. You start something because it seems like a good idea. You don't overanalyze it. You jump in. And if I had analyzed it, I would have quickly realized that food is short shelf life, low margin, capital intensive, labor intensive, and just a really challenging business to be in as a business model.
Well, it's interesting how you would have had the business and it had expanded into the Northwest and down the West, but you still felt that sense of pressure that, you need to keep expanding because of the nature of it.
Yeah, I mean, there was pressure. We were really cash flow strapped all the time. So even when we did get a new route built up, so for example, going from Sligo to Galway, we would need another driver, another van and more production staff. And naturally, you would be giving retailers, they would pay at the end of the month. So we were incurring that cost before we were getting paid. So we were kind of all the time building this cash flow problem that was going to hit us further down the line as it did.
Yeah. And then 2008 came along. And the downturn.
2008 came along after we had gotten really far. So we were supplying the likes of Aldi Ireland. We had their contract. It was 65 stores nationwide at the time. We had Air Aran. Páraic Ó Cadhain was one of my earliest supporters. Fantastic guy. We had Topaz Energy, which is now Circle K. Again, 65 stores nationwide. But then the downturn came. And, as I said, once we had volume increasing, we were doing okay. But in October 2008, volume almost overnight fell off a cliff. So there were less people in the workforce because they were losing their jobs. So obviously they're not buying lunch. People that were maintaining their jobs were taking less hours or taking pay cuts. So again, first thing to go is your lunch. They bring rather than buy. And all of those things sort of came together very quickly for us. And yeah, the business went into liquidation in 2008.
you had to close the business down. How painful was that?
Oh, that was enormously painful at the time. You know, there was no sense of work-life balance for me back then. I didn't even pretend there was. It was all about the work, and everything else was secondary to that. So, yeah, when it ended, it was like a death. It was a big shock to the system.
And when you say everything else was secondary to that, do you mean personal stuff, having downtime, having family time? Was the job all-consuming?
It was, yeah. And, you know, the nature of the business we were in was an 18-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week business. So, you know, we were producing all hours of the day, and then the first van would leave Donegal at 2 a.m. to get to Dublin. So 7 days a week, you know, we'd have the likes of Punchestown Racecourse on race days. That would have been very busy. So yeah, it was all consuming, and at the expense of relationships, at the expense of friendships. I suppose my deepest regret from then is the fact that I was not really mentally present for my kids as much as I should have been back then. And that's a big lesson, yeah.
That's a very hard verdict on yourself, Jenny.
It is, but I suppose, again, with the benefit, and I was only in my 20s then, I'm in my late 40s now, I suppose, of a bit of wisdom and hopefully maturity. But yeah, it was, you know, you realise as you get older how precious kids are and how fast they grow up. And I'm just, I suppose, consider myself really lucky that I've 3 grown-up daughters now that don't hold it against me, actually. And that saw my life back then as inspirational.
So shutting down the company, the mechanics of that is unpleasant and
it is,
not nice
yeah.
to deal with. And then what about the sense of personally for you? Did you feel I've given it my best shot and it didn't work out? Did you feel I could have done it better? This is my fault. I've made mistakes. How did you feel about it?
I would have blamed myself for it. I felt there was things I could have done differently. And again, with the benefit of hindsight and maturity, there were lots of things I could have done differently. But at the same time, when I look at it even now as a business model, I remember looking at a P&L of a similar competitor in Northern Ireland. I remember seeing their P&L because they were selling the business, and nearly all of their costs were 40% less than costs in Ireland. So their rent rates, electricity and labour costs, I remember distinctly as being 40% less than our cost base.
So it's a different proposition.
A different proposition entirely. So it was just a really challenging business model.
And when you then push the button on liquidation, it all goes over, whatever's there goes over to the liquidator.
It does,
there's
yeah.
a moment, or was there a moment? How did that play out?
So I was quite naive about how it would play out. I didn't really know. I rang my accountant the day I decided, that's it, we've run out of road, we've hit a wall. And he suggested a liquidator, so we appointed a liquidator. And really from that time on, they literally took the keys off me, literally closed down my email address, and that was it, which was, yeah, that was difficult. Then there was a creditors meeting, which is a really, really horrible experience where you've got everybody that the business owes money to sitting in front of you. You know, I'd staff that their wages checks bounced at the end of the week. Now, they subsequently eventually got it back from the state and statutory redundancy. But yeah, there was a lot of anger there towards me, understandably. And it was tough, yeah.
So you get through that and you get through the creditors meeting and the staff and the business is gone. What do you do then? Did you feel like, I don't want to get out of bed in the morning?
I did,
I want
yeah.
to go again?
For 6 weeks, for the first month, I think I barely showered. I had to drop my kids to school, but I think I went back to bed as soon as I did that. And I said after a few weeks that I was giving myself 6 weeks and my pity party was up after 6 weeks.
You set the timer on
I did, yeah. I said I was giving myself, I think it was to the end of November. And I said, that's it after that, done and dusted. Yeah, I always knew I would go again.
And at the end of the 6 weeks, what happens in your head?
In my head, it's what's next. It's, you know, what am I going to do next? I have to earn a living. I have 3 daughters. I was a single parent. What's next? Over time then, I started a digital marketing agency. So, and that worked quite well. I would have got into some training then and lecturing in LYIT. And I really enjoyed that, those couple of years. Really enjoyed that side of things.
So what about FitPink? Where did the idea come from, Jenny?
So FitPink came about when I was getting back into my exercise after having my 4th child, a little boy called Adam. Bought the big name brands, went for a run, spent the run yanking them up and trying to get them to sit properly. So I figured there must be a better product than this. Started researching the market, realised that activewear was the fastest growing category in apparel, and that really got me interested. Spent about 2 years researching and getting samples and iterating samples and changing things and developing relationships with suppliers in China and developing a small product line, which was ready to launch then in late 2019.
And of course, late 2019, the economy's going great. It's a great time to launch a business like that. COVID happens.
That's right.
You must have been worried with COVID.
I was still working full time, so I was managing New Frontiers for Enterprise Ireland in the Northwest, another thing which I really loved because it was working with startups and doing Fit Pink in the evenings. And things changed very, very quickly from March the 20th, 2020, I think it was. We went from doing a couple of orders every evening after work, I'd go in and pack them up, to doing dozens of orders and then tens of dozens of orders. And it really ramped up incredibly quickly. I think it would have fast forwarded the business at least 2 years in the space of a month.
You have this extraordinary resilience, a sort of a bounce back ability that not only if something goes wrong, but even when you started the cafe when you were 18, you moved on to a second cafe and then you moved on to something else. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I've just always been ambitious, I suppose, in terms of resilience. I think everybody's resilient, and I think you don't know you're resilient until it's tested. You know, people don't have an option. You can't lie down and stay in bed. So I think when people are tested with challenges, the vast majority of us find that resilience within us.
Your daughters would say that you're an inspiration to them, but I'm sure they probably have memories of the Doolittle business and when you were under pressure.
Oh, they do, absolutely. They joke about it now, about days where, you know, for example, we would have supplied Punchestown races. They would have had their sandwiches on a Friday for the weekend's races. They would have run out on the Saturday, phoned me. And so I'd say to the girls, right, up you get. We're away to Dublin in the van today. We're delivering sandwiches to the racecourse. And that was fairly chaotic with three children under the age of 8 in a van. But they remember all sorts of things. They'd be end up on the factory floor and in the office if childcare wasn't about that day. So they have lots of memories.
They remind you of that, no doubt, on several occasions, do they?
Regularly, yes.
What about when things were tough with Doolittle? I mean, do they have recollections of that? Is that something that they ever bring up with you?
I remember them saying that the first time they ever saw me cry was when Doolittle's went into liquidation. So they realised then really what a big deal it was. But they remember it clearly. It certainly impacted their lives too.
What about the future for Fit Pink? What plans do you have for it?
So really this year and into next year for us is scaling. It's continuing to grow in the Irish market and breaking into the UK market. And then 2024 onwards, we would see the European markets and further afield. But we know we've a really strong brand that's loved. We have thousands of 5-star reviews, and we really do believe we have a scalable global brand.
Well, Jenny Timoney, Managing Director of Fit Pink, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
It was a pleasure. Thanks, Richard.